Now, Tino, what are you doing in your garden this weekend? Oh,
I've just finished ripping up my market garden, so I'm very chuffed. Cobber, my tractor, and I have bonded quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And no, there's so much we can be doing. I mean, there's tomato sales on this week. I mean, Annette, I heard it earlier today, Annette and Neville up in the north, and then Margot White down here with the botanical gardens. No matter where you are in the state, you are sorted for tomatoes. But there's not just tomatoes on sale at these sales. There's also a lot of other plants as well, plus all the knowledge that you'll garnish to actually grow these wonderful crops that we can grow all through the summer period. But I mean, we can be putting in tomatoes. Well, it depends. You know, the rule is show day in the south, Launceston show day in the north. But if you know your area and you know that you don't get frost or you're going to be free of frost, feel free to put those plants in. And that goes for a lot of those summer crops. Things like zucchinis, pumpkins, etc. can all go in now. You still get your carrots in, peas, etc. So there is a whole plethora of vegetable crops to go in the ground. Plus all the wonderful things that are in flower at the moment. You know, I heard Juanita at Emu Valley, there's, you know, the cherry blossom. And you know, that cherry blossom set is a beautiful thing. And even when the wind does blow and you get covered in those beautiful petals, there's something very poetic and lovely about that. So, you know, all of it, just getting out there and enjoying all those wonderful spring flowers, that procession of spring as all those trees start to come into flower and leaf. And it's just a really lovely, exciting time. But if you've got a crop of, say, garlic in at the moment, do your weeding. Get your weeds out because they'll start to close up around those plants, especially things like chickweed and fumitree, those real climby annual plants. They're easy to control. You just pull them out and chuck them back in under some mulch or lay them down on the ground and they'll act as mulch themselves or green manure, I suppose, if you want. There's a lot of insect activity. We're sort of getting into that time of the year, obviously, yep, as it's warming up.
Well, in fact, after 10 o'clock, we're going to have Peter Norris, our beekeeper, in talking bees.
Lovely.
Because he says that now is the time when things are really getting busy.
That's it. You know, I'm talking to people whose hives are just filling up, as you know, watching their hives fill up with honey. So, but I've been noticing a lot of the African beetle larvae around. You know, that's that redhead cockchafer, or the corby grubs are also another soil dwelling grub, and they can they do damage to the stems and the roots of your plant, both the larvae and the adult. So, you know, keep an eye out for them. If you're digging over your soil now, it's a good thing because you'll be disturbing those larvae and hopefully, you know, impacting on those populations of adults that do a lot of damage later in the season. So
it may be time to borrow a friend's chooks.
Yes, and that's the best thing. I mean, there's a lot of products on the market that are poisons. Not just not using poisons. A lot of the poisons used for these particular crop pests anyway are ineffective. Their efficacy is debatable. So, you know, your best option is either wet your ground down. Moist soils, they tend not to like these larvae, so that's one really good way of going. If it starts to rain, get out there and water, and then get your chooks, your ducks, or whatever your particular ground feeding birds are, or just walk out of your garden, because I've got a lot of crows and currawongs that as soon as I've dug a hole and I walk away, they come down and start pecking around in it. So, you know, you can let your actual native birds do the job for you as well. And that way you're disturbing these grubs, and that's a really good way of controlling them. So,
can I tell you what I've done in my garden?
Yeah, I love hearing stories of your garden. We should have a book like Tales of Joel's Garden.
the chickweed in the has all been dug under and been made into green manure.
So
I've also added some aged manure to that garden and dug that through, letting that sit for a couple of weeks before I add my seedlings to it, which is probably going to be next weekend. I have removed a ton of white pebbles.
Nice. Yeah, good. Good work.
That's all gone. I have removed the hedge plant.
Oh.
I have removed the dying fern.
Well, the sick dying fern.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly dying now. If it wasn't before, Tina, you know, you gave it the kiss of death. And so you're like the godfather. Look at that dying Dicksonia in the corner there. It's no good. And so I have reefed it out. And
that's a very good sort of couple-de-couple. Yeah. Going there.
and I have mulched. I've gotten rid of the white pebbles, and everything has been mulched. And then, of course,
garden
I'm going to do the lawn because the lawn, and then, of course, the lawnmower dies.
Oh.
But you know,
it's scissors. Yeah. I was renting a lot, And, you know, you come up to that inspection date and you've got no mower, your mates don't have any mowers.
Yep, yep.
And scissors. It's quite remarkable how long it takes. How tedious the job ends up being after a couple of square metres. But
there's RSI in a single day for you, isn't it? The mower, and I literally, I looked up, you know, hey Siri, where is the nearest mower place to me? And there's one like
just
three blocks.
Around the corner. Yeah.
So I literally walked my mower. I pushed my mower to the mower place and went, "It's wrong. Fix it." And they took a look at the 10 years crusting of dirt on it and went, "Yeah,
yeah. There's no bringing this one back."
That's going to need a full service.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and fix that. I'm going to service the hell out of it. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I know. When the mechanic looks at you and looks at your machine and looks at you again, almost like you're serious. Serious, aren't you? You know, that's when you start
to
worry.
Is there machinery under this clod? when your lawnmower looks like grug.
Yeah, service actually, and that's a good point. It's this time of the year, one of those rainy days, it can be a good idea to service those tools, whether that be your hand tools or your mechanical tools. Because, you know, we are in that time of the year where you mow and then you come back next week and mow again. You know, the growth is accelerated. So checking air filters, checking oil filters, checking your oil.
It has filters?
It has, the bits that make it go brum, Joe. But just making sure your blades are on okay. Simple things like that because, you know, it's the better cut that you get, the better your plants will do. So, yeah, it's a good one, Joe. Well done.
Here is the challenge today. Can we find Tasmania's oldest functioning lawnmower?
Ooh.
Now
functioning.
Functioning and motorised. Yes.
Okay.
I don't want.
I've got a push.
Yeah, no. Push. I don't want a scythe. I don't want to know about your scythe. I would like to know the oldest functioning lawnmower, and I want to hear it go on the show this morning. Give us a call if you've got something more than, say, 30 years old. Let us know. Gardening Talk back after the 9 o'clock news. Coming up next, 1300 222 936 is the phone number. Gardening talk back time now. Let's see what we can do for Tony in Exeter. Hello, Tony.
Hey, good morning. Nice sunny morning up this way.
Oh, lovely.
Passion fruit.
Yeah, mate.
I've got two passion fruit vines and over winter or autumn and winter, had a huge crop of passion fruit.
Yep.
But when we picked them, nothing inside. We picked them all off, and then we got a few flowers back on, and we've had a little bit of fruit since, but still no fruit inside.
So it's sort of dry and desiccated, the fruit. They're forming, but they're just...
come out really nice and big and green, and they sort of start to go purple, nothing inside.
Well, you're controlling the... I'm guessing it's a purple Nelly Kelly passion fruit.
I think so. I wasn't the one that bought them.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Have you... Is the leaf on it big and glossy, or is it a sort of flat, matte, greeny leaf? Because what you get on these, they're grafted generally, the passion fruit, and the rootstock can take over, and they're kind of a fruit that just never... I mean, it forms, but they tend to sort of dry out, and it's, kind of what you're explaining.
Well, they look fresh, but there's absolutely nothing inside them.
Yeah, I'd say it could be either that your rootstock has taken over. So if you go out there, have a look at the base of the plant and trace one of the main stems up, and if your leaves are kind of not a shiny, glossy green, then you've probably got rootstock taken over. The other reason why it might be happening could be an environmental factor's come through. We had a very bad frost during the late autumn, I think. It was a snap one. That it could have affected it somehow that way, or a lack of water over the period can sometimes...
It does get a lot of water.
A lot of water. So it's not that. So, yeah, I'd say maybe your rootstock's taken over.
Means what? Pull them out and start again?
Yeah, look, you might be able to trace back to, if you could do find a couple of glossy leaves, and then the top grass, the scion part of the plant, the actual good fruit of the Nelly Kelly, that can then start to grow. And certainly this time of the year with the warmer weather, you can get a good bit of growth out of that. But you need to strip all that other rootstock off. It's a bit. You'll need to do a bit of investigation around your plant. But if that is the case, and that generally happens quite a bit with these grafted plants. You know, it's certainly the first year. If you don't control that rootstock, it's very vigorous and it can sort of take over the plant. And then, you know, in years to come, a lot of, you know, digging around passion fruit around their roots will cause that root zone to sucker and shoot again. So, I'd be checking for that. And let us know if you you do go, because it seems to be a very common problem with people growing passion fruit, certainly.
Okay, we appreciate it for that. Thanks.
No worries, problem,
Tony. Now, one question. How old's your lawnmower?
I can't go into that argument. We've only been here for 6 years, and I bought it when I got here.
Okay, then. You're no good to us, Tony. Thank you. Bye. Sue is in Lilydale. Hello, Sue.
Oh, hi.
G'day, Sue. How can we help?
Look, we've got a plum tree that we bought probably about 6 years ago, and it's two varieties, and I know one was green gage, and I can't actually remember the other.
Okay.
But anyway, it keeps... sprouting shoots from the base of it.
Yes.
And it's never fruited.
They've fruited the shoots at the base?
Never.
No, it's never.
The whole tree.
Sorry. Okay, what may have happened, like the previous caller, it may be that your rootstock is taking over. The thing with double grafted trees as well is you always find one side or one variety is more vigorous than the other.
Yeah.
So it has a tendency to draw all the energy out for itself. You know, it's taking the lion's share of the of what's going on down below it in the root zone. So that's where good pruning of multi-grafted trees, you need to sort of keep the vigorous one in check and promote the less vigorous variety.
Yeah, okay.
And that, how long's it been in for?
I reckon 6 years.
6 years.
It maybe five.
If it hasn't fruited... There's a few reasons. Pollination, obviously, but that could be due to one, the one more vigorous species has completely taken over the other one and the other one sort of died off. But what can also happen if it's a green gage and, say, usually they're coupled with a Coos Golden Drop, I've had a lot of people come in that are they're growing green gages and Coos Golden Drops over, you know, the last decade, and they've found that the flowering times have changed or are not always in sync, and that's why we have it's not in sync. You're getting one flower so that's what they were finding and what we were finding in nurseries and in orchards is that the golden gage, which is another yellow plum, is actually more in sync with the green gage. So it depends on which one you want, whether you're after the green gage.
We might just get it out and get something else.
and look, you can even, I mean, there's you know, with training techniques like espaliering, like cordoning, whatever, the plums are a bit harder because they tend to be, they don't like to be cut too much, but... you can get two trees in the space of sometimes one. I've planted even them in the same hole. You get where you get two trees and you plant them in the one hole and they pollinate each other. And you just put the trunks at different angles. So I usually put about a 30-degree angle on them, and that way you can get sort of the space of two trees in one.
I'd like to look at that too.
Yeah, there is competition issues there. Like, you know, they're going to be trying to get as what they can because they're two separate trees, but with a good amount of wood, food and water, you can, and good pruning, you can actually get a nice crop.
Good-o. Okay.
Cool.
I'll make a decision. And just like to tell you, at Lilydale we had frost this morning.
Yeah.
And my rule of thumb for tomatoes, cucumbers, capsicum is after Melbourne Cup Day. Here.
After Melbourne. Yeah, well, that storm in Victoria is
it's not.
Yeah.
We had a massive frost here last week.
Yeah. And that's about knowing your site. I mean, I love these seasonal guideposts, you know, like Hobart, Launceston, because it allows people who are starting gardening or moving to a new site to get a good appreciation of the way the seasons are going to go. But no, cheers.
Okay. Thanks very much.
So, how old is your lawnmower?
He's
56.
56. That's the contender.
56 years old. Now, how do you know that so exactly?
Because he's my lawn mower.
Oh, okay.
I like, there he goes, putt, putt, putt.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to see the doctor when that starts happening. Good on you, Sue. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
Sue in Lilydale there. If you've got a question for Tina, we have lots of lines free. Now's the time to call 1300 222 936. Particularly, we would love to hear from you if you have an old lawnmower. Mm. How old is the oldest lawnmower that we can find?
Down the Garden Path, you're with Joel Reinberger and Tino Carnevali on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
The Derwent Mercantile Collegiate Rowing Club is selling sheep manure from 8:30 to 4:30 today and tomorrow. The entrance to the club is opposite the lower botanical gardens entrance. So if you're going to the botanical gardens and parking down the bottom end of the gardens to go up and get your seedlings today, get your sheep manure while you're there. Just cross the road there. Be very careful because that's the highway there. But cross the road there and go and grab yourself some sheep manure from the garden while you are at it. Let's see what we can do for Peter in West Hobart. Hello, Peter.
Oh, good morning. Look, there's a couple of things. I need a name put to a weed that I have at home.
Yep. But
first, I'd like to mention that after years of being talked into it, we finally visited Emu Valley Rado Gardens last weekend.
How was that?
It was superb.
Yeah.
And after that, we went up and viewed the tulips from a way off. But the thing that struck us was everywhere we pulled up was onion weed. Onion weed, onion weed, onion weed. Big, white blankets of onion weed everywhere.
Yeah, it's a particular weed. It's yes. Not my favourite.
It makes quite an impression. Yes. Now, my weed question is, we have a weed that's competing with the sticky weed to climb up our broad beans. The leaf looks a bit like parsley, but it's very spaced along the stem. It climbs. It has a pink, slender flower with a magenta tip.
Yeah.
It's soft and easy to pull out, but I don't know what it is.
It's called fumitory. Which I think, like, fumare is smoke in Italian or Latin. So I think it's got something to do with the pink flowers, got a little bit of grey on the end of it, and I think it might have something to do with that.
Right. Yeah, because, matter of fact, we spotted that when we pulled up along the coast too.
And that'll climb up, as you said, through your broad beans, through your garlic, through, you know, and it tends to squash it. It's a really good climber. Even, like, fruit trees, it'll grow up through those lower branches, and it can tend to defoliate the bottom part of your tree if you let it go. So, simply pulling that out is, as you said, it's easy to pull out. And it's as long as you get it before it seeds, you can just basically chuck it in your compost bin or chuck it in under your mulch and or dig it back through the soil. So it's a really good way of controlling it.
It's just a nice soft one. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
No, that's my pleasure. It's far nicer weed than onion weed, that's for sure.
Good on you. Thank you. Now, Michael is in Launceston. Michael, how old is your lawnmower?
My maths isn't too good. I think it's about 49 years old.
Oh, that's all right.
44 years old.
Oh. 44 years old, Michael. That is amazing. What sort of lawnmower is it?
Can I mention brand?
Yeah.
Start with a V.
It's a Victor. My dad bought it in 1975. I got it off him. I don't use it as much anymore because I've got a ride on, but it still does work, and I still do use it occasionally.
Oh, does it still start sweetly?
It starts probably first or second go, yeah.
Does it still have paint?
Yeah. Green and white. Green.
Brilliant. Oh, no, I think I know the model. I used to have one as a kid. And
Mark 3 or something like that.
That'll be the one. Oh, cool.
Unbelievable. Can't believe
all right, 44 years old. That is the age to beat. Thanks, Michael.
No worries. Good on you.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Michael. Can you beat 44 years of age in a motor mower?
I like the idea that archaeologists in 1,000 years' time are going to be digging up these things going, wow, strange creatures roamed the earth called Victor, Mark 3. Anyway.
Joy is in Lagana. What's going on with your cherry tree, Joy?
I have a standard weeping cherry tree. In fact, I have three of them. And I bought them hoping that they were going to flower and be beautiful and fantastic. But the reality is they're about 3 years old or 4 years old now, and one of them's doing all right, and the rest of them are pretty ordinary. So I don't know if there's something special I should be doing with these trees or something, but it's not special at the moment.
How are they not doing how are they not doing well, sorry?
They're not flowering prolifically.
Yeah.
And the leaves are kind of a bronzy colour as opposed to a strong green colour.
Verdant green, yep.
And it's not as leafy as I would have hoped.
Right, okay. The bronzy colour is usually the new foliage coming out.
Yes,
and it takes on a reddish sort of bronzy colour. That's actually quite a good sign. It means that they've got all the nutrients that they need. Give it a couple of weeks and it should come out quite verdant. Then also the leaf sparsity might have been due to certain factors like is it well irrigated? Do you know, or are they well irrigated? Or
not so much.
Because, they do need a little bit of water, and certainly when they're waking up. If they wake up when it's dry, obviously, an alternative if it's too wet. But if it's dry, they'll tend to be a bit more lackluster. And certainly in the autumn period as well, having good amounts of water then. As far as the leafiness goes, have you pruned it at all? Because you can cut them back and you can promote a little bit more compact growth if that's what you're after.
I was thinking that it might be wind, or perhaps I have scale, and I can't tell the difference between if it's scale or just a healthy leaf with, healthy little branch with just its normal kind of mark from being a tree.
Yeah, no, they little sort of bally things on the leaf near the petiole, the little stem that goes onto the leaf.
It doesn't feel very raised.
No, they're part of the leaf, little things as they're coming out. No, that's fine. You'll probably find even insects seem to go for them because they're, sappy and soft and quite delicious, I'm sure, if you're an insect.
Just like me.
Just like Joel. Hold on, sappy.
Quite delicious, Tino. Come on. My mum thinks I'm cool, Tino.
My mum thinks you're cool too. That's normal. So what you can do is actually you can either pinch the tips out of the tree and that will promote growth further back, hopefully on the branch. If it is wind, obviously there's, not much you can do about it. Mm. It'll just defoliate it, and that might be an annual thing. You will find, though, once the tree gets to a certain size that, there'll be enough leaves there, a critical mass, I suppose. But you can shorten those weepy branches. You can cut them back during the winter, and that can promote a bit more growth during the summer. So you do lose obviously a bit of that pendulous habit when you do that, but you gain it straight away in the following season. So
okay, super. Brilliant. Thanks so much.
No, my pleasure.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Joy. Glad we could help you today. John in I'm not going to get to John yet. Andy's still talking to him. Let's go to Robert in Kingston. Hello, Robert.
Oh, good morning, Tino.
G'day, Rob. How you doing?
Oh, well, thank you. We just come back from a few months away on holiday, and while we've been away, despite the fortress electric fencing and everything else, the possums have been in and having a lovely time in my garden.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Have things survived?
No, well, look, I don't mind. I've lost all the sort of lettuces and annuals. That's okay. I can live with that. But they have savaged the fruit trees, in particular the apricot trees and the pears. They've eaten all the new growth off them.
Yes.
And I know I'm not going to get any fruit this year because the trees are damaged, but what can I do to try and sort of sustain them so that at least the trees will survive and won't lose them at home permanently?
Well, obviously providing good amounts of food and water, solving the problem, you being there now might even solve the problem. People activity around might keep them away, but if you can sort out the possums first and then give the trees enough water and food over the next season, then they should put on good amounts of growth. But what I'd be doing now is walking around if there are any, because damaged branches, like the weight of a possum on, say, something soft like an apricot branch, can snap it. So
yeah, there are lots of broken branches. branches and things, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be making some clean cuts. I'd be sort of walking around and probably just cleaning up any of that, because with the increase in insects, you can get a lot of problems occurring in those snapped sites, because there's a lot of little hidey holes for things to go in and, yep, and have their families. Making a clean cut where you can, or bandaging up if applicable in other areas, and doing supports. Obviously, if you've got flowers on them, you will get fruit. If there's enough, you know, if there is, the trees have still got a few leaves and a few flowers,
there's
you
only
will.
Very few leaves and very few flowers.
Look, you could almost take those flowers off if that are left, and then that plant can concentrate on actual vegetative growth this year or this season. And that way, hopefully, you'll get a tree back. And other than some, you know, cleaning up of those wounds, I probably wouldn't touch it at all. Or any of them at all this year, depending on how they came back. And then next winter, I'd be pruning to shape, you know, trying to get some kind of shape back in for the tree.
Yeah, okay.
So, cool.
Righto, thanks very much.
Hope that helps.
Cheers, Roland. Yeah. Thank you. Now, John is in Swansea. John, how old is your lawnmower?
Am I on the radio now?
You are on the radio now.
Right, it's 64 years old. It's a Victor.
Yeah. 64 years old. How do you remember exactly how old it is?
Because my mother bought it for me to mow the lawns, which was quite extensive when I was 19.
And how have you kept it going for so long?
Well, I've passed it on to my son-in-law now, and he still uses it.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. Did you buy yourself a much better one? Is that what happened?
No, I ended up having a small type of farm, so I had a tractor.
Oh, right. Nice. You upgraded big time. Yeah. 64 years old and still going strong. That is a great record.
It's a Victor.
Now, did you service it, or were you like me, you just ignored it until it died?
No, I serviced it.
Yep.
And when I gave it to my son-in-law, he had it serviced immediately, and it just works perfectly at the moment.
Oh, there you go.
I wonder, actually, the age of motor mowers. I mean, you might be, you know, one of the first.
Well, I'm certain it was one of the first rotary mowers that came out. I think if I remember, it's a Victor.
Yep. We haven't done our research on this.
This has just come up because it's come up. It's just one of those things. Good on you, John. Thanks for calling us.
That's a pleasure. Bye.
Thanks, John. Cheers,
can
mate.
You beat 64 years of age in a lawnmower? I'd love to hear from you if you can. I'm betting there's one of those people who works with the old machinery club. There's probably someone who's got a steam mower out there somewhere, and I'd love to hear about that. The number's 1-300-222-936. John from Crow's Nest in Queensland has called us. Hello, John.
My name's Doug, actually.
Oh, sorry, Doug.
G'day, Doug.
You're confusing me with my dad, I think.
Oh, okay, then.
Yeah, my name's Doug. I live in Crow's Nest in Queensland.
Yep.
For people who don't know, Crow's Nest is about 50 kilometres north of Toowoomba, and we are at the same altitude as Toowoomba, so 700 metres here.
Yeah.
So I've got two things. First of all, a gentleman rang earlier about the passion fruit.
Yep.
There is another way that you can tell if the rootstock has taken over, and that's by the colour of the flowers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
With the Nelly Kelly, the flower will be white with a little bit of purple in the base. Yep. And with the thing that's it's grafted onto, which is Passiflora cerulea, which you probably know,
yep,
the flower is more bluish.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
So that's another way to tell. So if the leaves are too confusing, he might like to have a go at
that. That's a really good tip. Thanks, Doug. Cheers, mate.
Thank you, Tino.
No,
my question is about Prunus glandulosa.
Yep.
Up here, we can grow Prunus glandulosa really well. They flower like crazy, and occasionally they get fruit. So the question is, do you know why we only have occasional fruit instead of lots, and is there anything we can do to improve the number of fruit we get?
It could be a winter chill issue. I don't know what your chill would be over your winter months, but they do like that chill for a good fruit set, or
yeah,
I should say good flower set and then fruit. Sorry, yep.
Oh, sorry. And I know it's all about chill hours, not necessarily how cold it can get.
Yeah, it's about
and
the amount
I've
of hours.
I've never actually tried to count that. The coldest that I've had here is -8.
That's pretty cold.
The coldest day we had this year was -5 to -1.
Yeah. Yeah, look.
So it can get pretty cold, but maybe the winter still is too short.
That's it. And that's where some years you might be getting a slightly colder winter and you might get better flower and therefore fruit set. And then in other years might be a bit warm. One way you can...
Does it need a pollinator?
Usually, yes, it's better to. Even if there's some self-fertile variety, it's always better, even with self-fertile plants of any type, it's always better to have either a neighbouring plant of the same species or a pollinator nearby.
Would you know, at my place here, I have 3 glandulosa.
Yep.
There are 2 pink ones, which are actually the same thing because one was a sucker from the other.
Yep.
And there's 1 white one. So would that be enough variation, do you think, or...?
No, I'm not too sure. If anyone does know, though, there's a lot of knowledgeable gardeners out there. But I'd say if you've got those 3 there, you've got variation in the within the species, that is. I'd say you'd be fine. I'd put it down to the winter chill. Your winter chill by, just as we plant, here to get more sun facing north, you can find a southern facing wall or create a barrier so that when that sun gets up in the morning in the east, it's not burning your frost off straight away. So you're getting an extra, sometimes it's only 10 minutes, half an hour or whatever, but over the whole season, that can add up, as you said, to the hours of frost that you need. We usually, to keep frost away, put on warmer water, but I'm not advocating going to your ice tray and getting ice out from your thing. But, I mean, these things can. Any way to make it cooler, I suppose, is what you're trying to do in that respect. So, but I think your pollination should be fine if you've got the 3 trees. So, other than that, if anybody's got any ideas on that, that would be wonderful. Because gardeners are just problem solvers, and we all encounter similar problems, and there's some ingenuity out there that goes unnoticed. So if you're one of those people,
sure thing.
Keep listening, Doug. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks very much, Tina. Thanks, Joel.
Thanks for the tip.
You're listening to ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. We'll be back with lightning round and get through some of these texts in just a moment. Chris from Hobart says, "Hi guys, the Victor lawnmower was invented in 1952, and since then they've sold over 8 million mowers in 30 countries. Thank you very much for that, Chris. But we can go back earlier than that. We can go back earlier than that because someone has sent us a text saying, I have an Atco mower that has on the catcher on His Majesty's service. It is a kickstart and drum type and is prior to the 1950s, which means it's at least 80 years old and still going.
Wow.
That is amazing. Can you beat that? Can you get a steam-powered one?
I've even got shovels that old.
I'd love to hear from you today. The number to send us a text is 0438 922 936, or you can call us 1300 222 936. Are you ready for a lightning round, Tino?
Never.
Okay. I just love the fact that I announced this before you gave this audible sigh, and I thought... I go to a guy to get a massage because I've got some problems with my arms and stuff, which require really hard massage, like really hard, painful massage.
Yep.
And the massage guy I'm there going, and he goes, "You have no idea the job satisfaction I get out of these sounds you make, Joel." And I get the same feeling when I go lightning round, and Tino goes, All right then. Simon from Jeeveston says, "Tino, a while back on Gardening Australia, you used a type of clay to line a frog bog. What was it called and did it work?"
That's bentonite clay. It's a potter's clay, I think. Farmers... We use it to make dams. When you've got a hole in your dam, if you don't have the right clay or you've got cracks in it, then you chuck a bit of bentonite down and it seals up. The clay itself, I think, expands to about 6 times its size, so it's really good at plugging those holes. The only problem with it is when it dries out, it shrinks back to its tiny particle, which then, depending on your soil type, can fall through your soil and you can lose it. You know, it leaches down through the soil profile and becomes part of your clay base further down. So, you know, keeping it wet in most situations is a good thing. But bentonite, B-E-N-T-O-N-I-T-E, I think.
Bentonite. Okay, bentonite. Going through here. So, happy market with mostly British vintage cars at the Village Tryabunna tomorrow, 10 to 1pm, plus produce from our rebooted garden with fabulous stalls. Thank you for that, Village people. And Sandy Bay Rowing Club are selling pea straw today from 9:30am on Sandy Bay Road, just past the casino. Julie in Mole Creek, who has provided you with your wine today, Julie. Tino, says, help, I have a Zygo cactus, a lipstick cactus, that I think is cactus. It was looking dry, so I repotted its coir hanger with cactus potting mix, gave it sea salt and wheat black tea. It looks pale and flaccid. My only indoor plant given to me on Mother's Day by my granddaughter. Flaccid cactus, that is either a great band name or a great insult. He's a bit of a flaccid cactus, isn't he?
Yeah, so, it sounds like a school band.
So, what does Julie do with her flaccid cactus?
Well, you know, the reactionary thing is to keep it well watered. I find that people then overwater them. So you know, be... What's the word?
Well, it's been repotted now.
Oh, it's been repotted. Sorry,
Given some black tea and stuff.
Just put a little bit of water on it every so often, and just to keep it up. One thing you might want to do too is zygocactus propagate very easily. So that little leaf segments, they're like, you know, the size of a 50-cent piece kind of, but longer. If you snap one of those off, if you want to save it, if it's a good bit, and then put that in a bit of dirt, and then you can repropagate so you won't lose that actual gift plant. So when the person comes around, they can say, where's my zygocactus? You go, here it is. Whether it only be quite small, but yeah, just keep the water up to it, but not too much. Just make sure it's not kept too wet and you'll be all right. They're pretty tough. They're durable.
Rodney in North Hobart sent us a photo of his old mower that he's had for 25 years. Purchased it for $10 at a church fair, and I reckon it was old when I got it. Still doing a fantastic job, but it's a pushy one.
I love my push mower. It's something really...
They're lovely things, but, you know, we want a motor mower. We want to hear it go... someone said, who is this? This is Tiki on Flinders Island. Says, I have a 2-year-old blood plum with one branch that looks like curly leaf, but I don't think it is because there's a lot of ladybirds on it. Am I able to cut this out without damaging the tree too much? And P.S., I would like to save the ladybirds.
Yeah. Look, the ladybirds are there as a response to something that they're munching on. If the leaf is curled over from the tip, there's a lot of insects that will roll leaves as a protection that creates a nice little protected area for them. You can usually just go into those leaves. If there's only a few leaves on the plant, I'd go in and actually unfurl the leaf and rub my thumb in to physically remove whatever's there. You can use, you know, soap sprays or neem oils, etc., but I'd be just using my hand if there's just a few leaves on there. And then if it's that sick, I'd be probably controlling the flowering and giving it good amounts of water and feed over the next couple of months and see if we can bring it back. The blood plums here, Flinders Island, might be a bit warmer. The blood plums do all right, but they tend to be the more temperamental of the citrus we grow here. And I grew one for quite a few years and I never actually got it to really blood up. You know, you get an orange, but it's never a true kind of bloody
red,
blood orange. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah, that would be my guess on that. And then you don't need to spray at all and you don't need to actually worry about the ladybirds. But if you do find that you want to use the soap or an oil, then just make sure, do it in the early morning or evening and just do it selectively. Like if you see a ladybug, I do the thing of actually just moving them off with my finger and then spraying on, and that's usually because a lot of these sprays are contact sprays, so if you don't coat the actual insect itself, then it's not going to harm them. So yeah.
Jill from Mount Nelson says, another possum story. We have a tall Maria,
yeah,
which has become very twiggy and sparse at the top. I suspect possums.
Yeah.
Should we trim the top or just leave it to regrow?
I'd probably pinch the top where the damage has been done, and you'll get you know, multiple bits of growth. But from that may also pose its own problem of closing up the top of the plant. So you may need to come through later on in a following season or the next year and thin that head out, that top of the plant out. That should work.
Sophie in Devonport says, I have a Tangelo tree producing very well, 200 plus this year, but the skins are quite thick. Is it because of the cool climate, or is there something I can do to reduce the thickness of the skin? The fruit is very tasty otherwise.
It can be a response to the cold and water as well. Like putting good amounts of water down can also help that out. But I'd say it's just a response to the cold. Growing them in our cooler climates, you know. And good on you, 200 Tangelos.
Fantastic. Byron in Lena Valley says, can you compost oxalis weed with the seed, and can the seed be destroyed within the compost?
Even in hot compost, oxalis and the aforementioned onion weed are quite tenacious.
It's just like a sauna for them. Oh, this is delightful. I'll feel very relaxed when I get back in the soil later on.
Yes, all those aches and pains gone. No, I wouldn't. With oxalis, if you are wanting to, to break it down, usually the best way is to soak it in a bucket of water. It takes a very, very long time, but that can actually destroy that actual plant and bulbs and seed. That would probably be the only treatment method I would use, because it tends to have a lot of bulbils that, and there's nothing worse than spreading out compost thinking you're doing your garden good and then having oxalis come all through the garden. I speak from experience.
Ian says, a question for both Tino and Peter. There is no Peter here, though. bees are attracted to purple and blue. Surely attraction isn't the same as productivity. Which combination of flowers and plants are good for bee yield and bee health?
Well, from a backyard point of view, diversity. Any, all flowers and all through the year. Like, wattles are really important because they tend to flower at the end of winter or during the middle of winter to the end of winter, so they provide good food sources for the bees. If they're foraging over the urban environment, there's usually enough flowers around for them, within their bee zone. But, obviously, things like lavender are great. They flower all year round. So, spot flower here and there. So those kind of plants are very good. They're very, very productive plants, but the might be a good question for the bee guy next.
That is true. We'll bring that on to Peter Norris after 10 o'clock when we have bee talk back going on.
There are a lot of plants that produce a lot of pollen and some that don't produce a lot. Like fruit trees tend to not produce that much pollen. They're not really heavy with the pollen. But and then you've got weeds like the Echium, the Prada Madeira, that grows around the place that, I've got a love-hate relationship with it because where I see it, I want to rip it out. But then it's in flower and you see the bees at this time of the year and they're just humming around it and loving it. So, yeah, diversity would be
All you've got to do is put them into a garden and they're no longer a weed. As soon as they're a plant in a place you want them to be, it's not a weed anymore, Tino.
Are you talking about your chickweed in your garden? Still a weed.
Green manure. Green manure. Heidi says, Tino, is all blood and bone created equal, or are some better than others? What should we look for in the details on the packaging?
Well, mostly on the packaging, I think you'll find that it says 30% blood and bone, or a certain percentage, and then percentage coarse material. Now, that coarse material, I think, is generally like sand as a bulking agent through it. And then you've got your, and that's how they get the percentage of, I suppose, phosphorus, nitrogen, and your other trace elements and in that actual fertilizer, what you'll read on the back. Not all blood and bone is created equal. I was fortunate enough to interview an orchardist down the south, Bob Magnus, and he uses blood and bone, like proper blood and bone. It's that, and with bones in it, and it's like, wow, that's pretty raw. But he lays it on top and it works really well, and then just caps it over so rodents don't get to it. So it depends on where you're getting them from, but
there is actually a percentage of blood and bone on the side of the packet.
On the side, you can read that, and from that you can ascertain whether or not your blood and bone is more blood and bony or more coarse materials. So.
Jay says, don't forget the unmotorized push reel mowers. I have one here that the kids push around. Strangely, they still have all their toes so far. Thank you for that, JC. We're still looking for the oldest running motor mower in Tasmania. At the moment, we've got 80 years old. We've got an ATCO motor mower that's 80 years old. If yours is older, do give us a call. Let us know. 1-300-222-936. Away from the text, though, and back to our telephone lines for Mary in Brighton. Hello, Mary. What's up with your lilies?
Hello. I've got a... what do you call them, belladonna lily.
Yeah.
In a pot, and I've had it there for about 3 years. It was given to me, and when it was given to me, it was in flower.
Yep.
Since then, it's made another bulb, but the bulbs go soft, and every year I think it's dead because it's still in the pot. I want to put it in the ground, but when?
It's died down now.
Yes.
I'd put it in now. Sorry. I'd put it in now. The bulb's going squishy, though. I'm not sure what that would be unless they're being exposed to some kind of environmental factor like a cold air or frost or something. But you could chuck them in the ground now. They'd be fine. Just make sure.
Right.
Usually, though, autumn is fine. But if it's in a pot, I mean, you're really not disturbing it that much. Just pre-dig your hole and wet all that down and then just transfer your plant directly into the ground and you should be okay.
It's never flowered since I got it. That first time it was in flower when I got it, and it's never flowered since. It just comes to green leaves and then it dies down.
By removing it from the pot, you might want to break it up a bit too if there's multiple bulbs in there, and then
Yes. And
then put them in the ground. Then you'll find Yes. Next year it'll probably flower quite well for you. It's probably doesn't quite have enough space to spread its wings, so to speak. So
why I want to get it in the ground. I know it's
fine. Cramped
up in the pot.
Yeah, let it be free.
Yes.
And both it and you will enjoy it. So
okay, then. Thanks, Tino.
Thank you, Mary. Cheers.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more questions for Tino in just a moment.
Joel Reinberger and Tino Cannavale on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Daryl's in Deloraine. G'day there, Daryl.
Yes, how are you, gentlemen, this morning?
Very well, thank you, mate. What's going on at your place?
Look, I've got a couple of stone fruit that are second year in the ground, a peach and a nectarine. Curly leaf's a big problem, particularly with the nectarine. It just about wiped out the whole tree last year, which I pruned back very hard, didn't fruit whatsoever.
Yeah.
This year, the peach has improved, whereby it's got a lot of fruit, but the nectarine, once again, is nearly 95% curly leaf.
Yeah, nectarines are pretty bad for it, that's for sure.
Are they? Anyone in particular that's worse?
No, it just depends on where you are and the season we get. You know, curly leaf, it's a little bit late to be controlling it now. You know, the copper spray that usually gets applied prior to leaf bud burst is, you know, once the leaves are out, the it's already in effect. So, you know, nothing you're going to do is going to be controlling it except for picking up any old leaves and either composting them, but even that can perpetuate the problem. Some people put quite a bit of nitrogen around as the leaf drop in autumn, and that can help to break those leaves down quicker. I've just left a miniature peach that every year got covered in curly leaf. And the thing with curly leaf is once it gets warm, once those daytime temperatures get above, I think, 28 degrees, you'll notice mid-season it'll just suddenly stop. And then all the new leaves that come out are unaffected. And then you pick off the old leaves, and that's a really good cultural kind of method to control it. But what I want to try, and if you've got a hairdryer, give it a go, is get your hairdryer out there and blow your tree. I mean, it's the ambient temperature in the air that'll tell the fungus, they'll tell the switch in the fungus to say, oh, it's getting really hot, it's later in the season, all right, I'm done for this year, and then hopefully you'll be able to get leaves that come out earlier that don't have curly leaf. So I'm just waiting for to plant a stone fruit near my front door, so I've an extension cord distance away from the local PowerPoint to see if it works. It's a theory. I haven't tested it.
To the stage where if it doesn't fruit because of the curly leaf, because none of the flowers set to fruit, then there's probably no point having it there because it's going to be every year. This is the second year it's been in.
That's it.
And I did use another powder that the Prospect Nursery gave me, which is a white powder, and you actually put it on only once. And it's meant to, he recommends from the States, but actually the one application at bud swell was enough.
Yeah, well, the timing's right. You know, the bud swell is when you start to affect it. White powder, I'm not sure of the product, so
But I've used the copper one the year before, every fortnight, right through until the flower burst or the bud burst.
Yeah.
And it was nearly as bad, not as bad as this year. So.
Yeah. Look, and it's timing. And sometimes with those, you know, copper sprays is, you know, I've had so many people where they'll spray it on and then it rains and it just sort of washes it off. Copper's very sticky, you know, you've got a bit of grace there, but generally speaking, if it washes off, if you don't have 3 to 6 hours of dry time, it's ineffective, you know, completely. So
you don't need to put a wetting agent with that copper spray?
Usually, not ones you're going to buy from a local nursery. You can get, like, wettable sulfur, which is a good one to add with it and actually gives you, in itself, is a miticide and a fungicide. And just to be clear, sulfur is, you know, completely safe to use. Copper, on the other hand, is toxic. It's an organic, you know, it's under the organic umbrella as a spray, but copper is toxic. So just beware when you're using that, anybody. But sulfur is certainly a really good thing to add with it as well. Wettable sulfur, I think, it's sold under. So
I might give it one more year, and if it doesn't do any good, then I think I'll pull it out.
Oh, you're a good man. I was going to say, like, you know, persistence, you know, you can trial it this year, pick off the flowers if you need to, try the hair dryer. Actually, if there's any mycologists out there that think that's a good idea, ring in, let me know.
I reckon what you want is a hand dryer out of a bathroom, a public bathroom.
Ooh, those
because they get quite hot and they blow a lot of air in volume. So I reckon, you know, one of those Dyson ones. Just about knock the tree over, but yeah.
Well, thanks very much, gentlemen.
Best of luck with it, Daryl. Thank you.
Bye.
Rika is in Perth. Hello, Rika.
Hello, Tino, and hello, Joel. How are you both?
Marvellous.
We are wonderful.
I just thought this morning, that was my text, I'd rather loan Joel than the chickens, I think, from somebody.
Am I expected to go through your lawn and eat Corby grubs, Rika? I don't know about your hospitality.
Joel, they're tasty. They're very tasty. Don't judge before you try.
listen, I've got a question about two questions, actually, because one was never answered, or both were never answered, actually. I asked about aloe vera, and the aloe vera's leaves are going limp, and I value aloe vera a lot.
Yes.
I've got three things about it. The leaves are going limp. Do they best grow inside or outside? And what soil type? And how do I feed it if I have to feed it?
The leaves are going limp because it's cold, and is it growing outside?
Well, it's in a enclosed area.
Yeah. Look, cold overnight temperatures, my aloe is looking the same at the moment, and because I've got nowhere inside to put it, and even when they're inside, if they're close to a window on a really cold night, they can go a little bit limp and yellowish as well as a little bit soggy. Inside during the winter, outside during the summer. And plenty of water during the summer as well, and you'll get good growth out of them. As far as mix goes, look, they like drainage, and all potting mixes these days, well, the majority of them, drain well. You know, that's their one characteristic that they do really well. And also as far as feed goes, I've really never fed mine other than just a little bit of fish emulsion that gets splattered on it. As I'm doing my other pots, really. So, yeah, that's you can put like a slow release, and you're sure you could feed them with a complete fertilizer, but just a little bit of fish emulsion here and there. They're pretty tough and they're pretty good. So,
Wow. And the other question, and thank you for that. I got never an answer for the little spots on the camellia leaves, which I sent in weeks ago, and I never did get the answer on that one.
Oh, so, we can't. We always get about three times as many texts as we can get to, Rika. That's all. So don't be offended.
It's quite right. I'm not offended.
No.
I'm only asking.
So you got spots on your camellias?
There's a brown spots on the leaves. Like the brown spots are in the leaves, not on the leaves.
They're actually inside the leaves. If you hold it up to the light, is it just like give you a halo effect around those spots?
Well, I haven't thought about looking at them.
There's a lot of leaf spot viruses on camellia. There's brown spot, but usually they're, well, Usually they're not so much of a problem. It's a seasonal thing sometimes, but as far as a general kind of rule of thumb with them is you might want to try clearing the tree out as far as getting a little bit of airflow through.
It's only a bush that's
only a little one.
Not too bad, no.
Yeah.
But I'll have a go at it and see what I can do with it.
Yeah.
And the other question, you said Blood and Bone has a bulking agent. Now, which one is... What was the name of that, so I can get a better quality one, please?
Well, as far as what brand is, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to say, but if you look on the back of any packet, I mean, most of the ones from the nursery are all pretty much the same quality and the same amounts. There's some from agricultural supply places that are a little bit higher, but if you look on the back of the pack, it'll have ingredients. And that'll, I think it's ingredients, but that'll have that information on there for you. And that way you can just...
What is the percentage of blood and bone in the blood and bone and buy the one with a better percentage.
Yeah. And even then, look, having the one with the lower percentage in it isn't necessarily a bad thing either because, you know, some plants don't like a hell of a lot of really strong food. And you know, sometimes when you get the stronger stuff, my rule of thumb with your average blood and bone is a handful every square meter. If I put a handful of the stronger stuff on, I'm probably getting double the dose than what I'd need. And that might be fine with plants that are, you know, pigs and like a lot of food, but in some plants you might be burning them. So that's where they formulate these things specifically to, you know, as a general thing for most plants.
But blood and bone is normally, would normally be, like, aged, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be sold like a very young...
I don't know about the age of it. Certainly it'd be processed as far as there'd be, I'd suspect, I'm not sure, but there'd be some pasteurising going on of the product. So they'd, you know, heating it to above 60, 70 degrees to kill any pathogens in there. But I'm not too sure of the actual process. I'm sorry, yeah.
Oh, well.
I'll do a little bit of homework on that.
Blood and bone homework, we'll note that down. But Tina has to tell us about how blood and bone is made next week. We're going to send you to a factory and you're going to come back ashen-faced from it.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm hoping that another thing I was going to say, I hope Sally Wise comes back soon.
As do I. Thank you, Rika. Thank you.
We all hope Sally comes back.
Yes, Sally, when Sally comes in, she brings in...
Hearts lift with joy.
She brings in like a giant box of food and the staff of the newsroom descend upon they normally turn their nose up at the radio people, but they descend upon the radio studio like vultures to scoop up clotted cream and jam on scones and whatever else that she has brought in. Thank you so much, Tino. Love to
Cheers,
see you.
Joel. Thanks, everyone.